Hall while at our present location, 1990 K Street Northwest. We hope that you will attend this important meeting to discuss WPFW's relocation plans, as well as other important issues facing the station. Healthy refreshments will be served. We hope to see you there.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nick, and you are tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
And welcome to Committee Watch and Comment for Tuesday, November 26th. I'm Dave Raven. We've got a good show for you. It's great to be with you. Coming up, the artistic director of Step Africa talks about their upcoming holiday show at Arena Stage. You're not going to want to miss this, folks. But first, I want to thank those who donated to the station during our recent fundraising drive. We really appreciate it. You know, you don't have to listen to a bunch of commercials. You know, I'm listening to podcasts and I have to deal with all these commercials, even during a, you know, a nonprofit podcast, but you don't have to deal with that at WPFW. And we really appreciate your supporting the station. And on with the show. Needless to say, there's an enormous amount of disinformation, misinformation floating around right-wing media. For example, the big lie that Trump actually won the 2020 election, the great replacement theory, white Americans replaced by illegal immigrants engineered by those horrible Democrats. The deep state is running everything. Haitian immigrants will eat your pets. These falsehoods certainly impacted our most recent election and seem impervious to critical thought amongst Trump's true believers. Anything to be done about it? We're joined now by The Guardian's Rachel Longang and freelance investigative reporter Lindsay Byerstein. Welcome you all to Community Watch and Comment. I hope I got your pronunciations correct.
You did, yep.
Oh, good.
Nailed it.
You never know. I do my best. And we really welcome callers. It's Community Watch and Comment. We want to hear from you, 202-588-0893. We're going to set up things with our wonderful guests and then go to you all. But please call in, 202-588-0893. And be patient. Let's start off by taking a look at some of the falsehoods. Trump is now talking about on day one, 25% tariffs on Mexico, Canadian, and Chinese imports. It's not explained as a tax cost for consumers. Your thoughts? And I'm going to just be throwing out a lot of questions here and want you both to just chime in, because I'm imagining you both are going to have comments on all of these questions. So just please chime in. So what do you all think about these tariffs?
I mean, it's just stunning that there's, you couldn't get a more clear-cut fact. It's just a crystalline example of the kind of disinformation and lies that Donald Trump ran on. He claimed that tariffs would be paid by other countries. And you know, you can look it up in the dictionary. You can look it up in, the law. A tariff is a tax on imports, and this is not some mystery. This is not some matter of opinion. It's not what economists say. It's just what a tariff is. And throughout the campaign, whenever Donald Trump was challenged on this, he would just say, "No, it's not." And the media were kind of stymied because where do you go from there?
Right.
Because yes, it is.
Rachel, any thoughts?
Yeah, that's a great point. I do think the costs will be borne by consumers. I don't think the companies that get charged these tariffs are going to, like, out of the goodness of their souls somehow pay, you know, the full brunt of that cost. And you know, whether they go into effect immediately, I think we'll see some sort of market response to that for sure. But yeah, like I, we're in this environment where, you know, when you're confronted with someone just simply saying, no, it's not, where do you head from a complete denial of a fact? And I think that's something that as journalists, we're going to struggle with for another 4 years here and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, in a certain way, as long as we don't get completely eliminated, I mean, the next 4 years are going to be, you know, journalistic intensive, I think we can say. I mean, what Thomas Jefferson said, you know, if he had to choose between government and journalists, he would pick journalists in terms of you know, making some effort, making some attempt at quote unquote the truth. I mean, no one is you know, above scrutiny, but it's certainly an important time to pick your sources. I mean, you know, I have an acquaintance that you know, that wants me to listen to Ben Shapiro and other podcasters and stuff, and I think it's extraordinarily important to listen to what everyone is saying. I think it's, you know, and I'm trying to listen to Ben Shapiro. This is a very conservative podcaster, but you know, he's you know, what are his sources? You know, I mean, you guys are talking about, you know, what will happen with tariffs, and based on some kind of quote unquote truth that we can all agree to, but these guys aren't accountable to that apparently, and half the country is believing them over, you know, a sufficient enough of the country to elect Donald Trump. So, you know, it's very important to be accountable, to choose your sources carefully. So what's going to happen with tariffs? I mean, do we just let Donald Trump hang himself? I mean,
the president has unilateral power to impose these tariffs. There's a complication in that, you know, there's a free trade deal that he signed with Mexico and Canada that, you know, might disallow some of them. But in general, one of the really worrying things about Trump's tariff policy is that he has such sweeping, unchecked power to impose tariffs and exceptions to those tariffs just at his will without any kind of intermediary or oversight from Congress. And the courts have historically said that the president has virtually unchecked power to impose or grant exemptions to tariffs. So it's a really worrying situation. I mean, it seems like a lot of people are thinking this is only an initial negotiating tactic for him against Canada and Mexico. But historically, when he's done these sorts of things, when he's made these kind of outlandish threats, it's in order to get leverage for some other really bad concession. He's going to extract something from these countries with the threat of tariffs, and the threat never really goes away. So it's just getting off on a terrible foot with what should be the U.S.'s closest allies and what are already its biggest trading partners.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Rachel?
No, I think that's accurate. And I think, like, there's been a lot of things that are promised to be day one policies. I don't know to what extent he can pull off all of them, but I think we should take them at their word and be prepared for, you know, especially as we're talking about like things like deportations, the goal of the tariffs is related to immigration and drugs as well. And if their plan on immigration that is anywhere near what they've threatened, I think we should all be prepared for a speed and a scale that we haven't seen yet. And I think, like, for me, I've been trying to, you know, get my head and my stomach around that, like understand what this looks like on a daily basis before he takes office so that we can be prepared to cover it from there and articulate it to readers, like just how different it's going to be, that, you know, this is what you voted for. He's been saying these things all along. So, the tariffs are one piece of what I think we all need to be wrapping our minds around right now.
Yeah, I agree about the immigration. I think the media has been shy about talking about, I mean, people talk about how sweeping, sometimes how expensive, but not as much how violent and invasive it's going to be. That we need, that in order to do this, the government has to know where millions of people are throughout the country, which means vastly increasing surveillance. And then they have to go and physically remove people who don't want to be removed, which means kicking down doors, which means potentially shooting people. It's going to be extremely violent and traumatic if it happens, when it happens.
Yeah, I mean, I had a 10th grade math teacher, you know, when some kid was answering incorrectly and some of us were letting him know that we thought that it was incorrect. And he would go, silence. Excuse me. Let him hang himself and then jump on the rope. I mean, this is to a bunch of 16-year-olds, right? And it's kind of, I think it applies in this situation. I mean, you know, employers go, no, a lot of these construction workers, these maintenance workers, we need them. We don't have people taking the jobs. And they're going to break up families and knock down doors. I mean, it's not a pretty picture. At least they'll be able to protect, you know, those pets from being eaten. It's a very worrying situation, to say the least. I mean, I was out. I'm not some neutral journalist anymore. You know, I was out canvassing in North Carolina for 2 weeks leading up to the election, and I was just encountering this incredible barrage of misinformation from people whose doors I was knocking on, and it's difficult to deal with it.
Did you get any pushback about FEMA myths in terms of the idea that relief money had been diverted from disaster relief from the hurricanes to supporting undocumented migrants? Did you get any of that lie coming back at you?
I didn't get it because I was in Charlotte and the hurricane really hit, you know, west of there in Asheville, in the greater Asheville area. So I actually didn't encounter that, but, you know, I encountered a lot of misinformation on the part of folks, and you know, you're trying to knock on as many doors as you can and you're not able to have extended conversations with people, and it's an ongoing deep process to try and influence people's opinions on these kind of things. And my partner actually was calling into swing states and was encouraged to have those kind of conversations. I was not so encouraged to do so. It's a daunting task. We're going to get to, you know, I want to hear, you know, your thoughts about, you know, how we can change this situation. I think it's rather daunting. It's frightening. And please do call in. We want to get to callers. We'll put you on hold. But the number is 202-588-0893. I think this is like really important. We're hearing all the information about, you know, the disinformation that was put out there and the challenge is, what do we do exactly? Because the people, you know, that think Trump is just swell and doing fine and he's going to do the right thing, they're not listening to this program, right? This is Pacifica Radio. This is Progressive Radio. We're not talking to the audience that we actually need to influence. And how do we do that? I think that's the biggest question. They're not reading The Guardian. They're not reading Alternet, right? You know, how do we get to these folks? And I want to talk about that as we go forward later in the program. So let's just, one thing I did hear out there in the Hastings, if you will, was that the United States is being invaded by people of color from Mexico and elsewhere. The Great Replacement Theory, this is being engineered, excuse me, by the deep state, by the Democrats who want to replace these God-fearing white Americans with these illegal immigrants. I want to hear both of your thoughts about you know, this untruth, to put it mildly.
Yeah, this was incredibly widespread before the election. And I think you saw Elon Musk kind of promoting this theory a lot. He would say things like, the Democrats are importing voters to key swing states and they'll never be a Republican win ever again because of this, and just sort of making these broad claims. And because of the platform that he has now and completely unchecked like ability to spread those sorts of claims, it really went, you know, far more broad than I think people realize. And then the only reason that, you know, all of these claims of non-citizens voting didn't really have much of an effect after the election is because Trump won. I think they'd be in a totally different situation if he had lost. We'd be sitting here talking about all the various ways they were filing lawsuits to try to overturn election results. That table was very well set. They were trying to make these claims in advance. They just didn't need to, I guess. But this was the predominant narrative of this election, was that there were both widespread non-citizens voting in U.S. elections already, a claim that is factually incorrect, and then that the goal of Democrats was to bring in more non-citizens, make them citizens, or make them able to vote some other way to sway elections to Democrats permanently.
And I just want to point out a huge irony here, that one of the implicit belief behind the Great Replacement conspiracy theory is that the descendants of, you know, of migrants will be a permanent Democratic voting bloc, but that is allegedly why Democrats want to bring in people from Latin American world. And this is, of course, not true. Donald Trump would not be president-elect today if there hadn't been, a 20-point voting swing among Latino male voters. These are Americans, of course, but the idea that the descendants of migrants are invariably a permanent Democratic voting bloc is false. And because it's false, Donald Trump will be president again.
Right. I mean, there's so many ways to criticize this perceived knowledge. What do you all think about, I mean, it was brought out in the debate, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, mocking Trump for this idea that Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, were eating their neighbor's pets. And it just seemed completely ridiculous, but it seemed to be accepted. Any thoughts on that?
That was one where I was surprised that he brought it up, but it was like, to me, an indicator of like how the online discourse became the offline discourse, like very cleanly this election. Like there was not a lot of, you know, things happening in real life that, you know, online amplified these things to like a crazy degree pretty quickly. And that one in particular was like debunked right off the bat. I mean, and it was not it was intended to create a racist portrayal. It wasn't intended to be some sort of factual commentary. It was intended to be, these are other people than the ones we want in our country, and here's how they're other, you know, by creating a false narrative about them. And there was a real material impact to the people living in those communities that I think really cannot be discounted, that will continue far beyond the electoral politics here. And I'm sure will play into any deportation orders because of this narrative that's been sown about Haitian migrants in Ohio in particular. So this, I think, really took the misinformation ecosystem really went far beyond, you know, just an online discourse among, you know, right-wing accounts that stir things up just to stir things up. We had the vice president tweeting about it. It becomes part of the presidential debate. You have like the House Judiciary Committee creating AI images of ducks and cats and things. Like this really snowballed in a way that I think really encapsulates the problem that we have right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's disconcerting because this is putting people's lives at risk. You know, I mean, these Haitian folks went to Springfield because employers needed, you know, capable, responsible employees, and they supplied this, and now they're being attacked and endangered. You know, how many bomb threats occurred in Springfield after, you know, this Republican allegation? I mean, it's just, it's extremely disheartening. And it's reminding one with any historical sense of, you know, this has been tried and true in the past. I mean, this is what Hitler did with the Jews in the 30s. You know, it's the it's not our fault, it's not the government's fault, it's these scapegoats. Any thoughts about the historical correlations of what Trump and Vance are doing with immigrants now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that social scientists have been warning us for a century about the danger of this conspiracist ideology, that there's an intimate connection between conspiracism and totalitarianism, because it's not just scapegoating, it allows for evidence-free scapegoating. For instance, the international Jewish conspiracy theory posited that, you know, the Jews controlled all the organs of the media, they controlled science, they controlled the government, they controlled the military. And in reality, the Jews were about 1% of the German population and didn't control anything by numbers or by institutional power. But Hitler could say, well, the reason there's no evidence, the reason that you don't see the evidence of this insidious control is because it's working so well. And we still see that today with Trump attacking all sources of reliable information and just giving people a permission structure to abandon consensual reality, that there's no evidence that Haitians are eating pets. But the only reason that you don't see any evidence is because the media is corrupt, because the Springfield City Council is corrupt, because all these people are lying and laughing at you and keeping the truth from you. And the way that you break free from that is to support MAGA so that you can be valorized and be part of this side that's restoring your dignity from the malign other.
Yeah. It's frightening. I mean, I think there was, but the city manager of Springfield denied that this actually was happening and was ignored. I should say
that
I'm speaking with the Guardian's Rachel Longang and the freelance investigative reporter Lindsay Byerstein. And we want to hear from folks, and let's go to folks right now. We're at 202-588-0893. Do we have a caller that would like to chime in? I'd love to hear from you.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Thank
this
you
is,
for,
Ray.
For checking in.
This is Ray calling in, your co-host.
Please.
Okay,
I think this is my co-host Ray Valencia calling in, and your thoughts, por favor.
Yeah, so I just wanted to, you know, over the campaign, I was working with a nonprofit group that works on advancing progressive policies on behalf of working class Americans. Okay, that's their whole mission statement. And so during the campaign, we called basically all the people in their database, and they lived everywhere. But we focused on ones in the swing states. And these are people that were not necessarily registered to vote. Many people were not voting, did not vote in this election. But when talking about disinformation, you know, a lot of folks, where they're getting their news, we asked them questions in a survey. You know, who do you plan to vote for if you're going to vote? Why aren't you voting if you're not voting? You know, where you're getting your information. And a lot of folks are not watching Fox News or watching mainstream media. They're online. They're getting their news mostly on social media. And so that's where a lot of the misinformation is running rampant. But also, they're pursuing news that they're not getting on the mainstream media, right? And so their understanding of things is in a completely different way. But when talking to folks about what's the issue that's most important to you in this election, all this stuff that comes up really comes down to the economy. And immigration, their anger about immigration is that they feel, to a large extent, migrants come to the United States and they receive benefits that people that live here are no longer eligible for, like food assistance, housing, transportation. And they see this in their towns, and it's making them really angry. And then they go online, and this stuff gets reinforced and spun up by, like, Elon Musk and things, saying how migrants are going to come over, and the Democrats are doing this in order to bring in more Democrats. So I just wanted to offer that because it was just an interesting perspective for me in approaching this from a nonprofit perspective, talking to people about what they just think is important in terms of the election and where they're getting their information.
Thank you, Ray. It's really important. Your thoughts, Lindsay and Rachel?
I think those are really important. Those are really important issues, and it's very hard because there's so much misinformation even in that, in terms of so many people believe, for instance, that migrants are eligible for welfare, that migrants are eligible for all these benefits they don't even get. And where do you even start trying to educate people about how this really works? Because there is some complexity there in terms of, you know, people getting various kinds of state and county and federal support as, you know, in specific categories. But in general, the idea that migrants are absorbing huge amounts of benefits of programs that, native-born Americans are not getting is at best problematic and at worst false, depending on the claims that you're making.
Right. Well, it's false because we don't have a strong people social... are witnessing and experiencing, and that's the problem. It's like in New York City, migrants came, they were on buses, and they were giving vouchers in New York and were staying at a hotel. So if you're homeless in New York City and you're seeing that, okay, you just feel like now you're blaming the migrants because they're getting, your perception of it is that they're getting help, right, that you're not getting. And that's what people are getting really angry about. And Bernie Sanders has been talking about this for years. And so the misinformation to them, it's misinformation, but you got to understand that their experience is very real. And so their, perception is reality.
Rachel, I think you had a comment.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because we don't have a super strong social safety net in this country, that scarcity then breeds competition, a sense of competition over that's resources. And that's really, I think, where a lot of that that feeling is coming from. And, you know, the states that started busing migrants from the southern border, like Texas, when they began that program, they really did effectively nationalize the conversation because it put people in other communities that hadn't necessarily dealt with those border influxes in previous years. So, you know, it's a policy that if it were intended for electoral purposes, which it likely was to some degree, it worked. It really did, like, bring the immigration issue to other communities that hadn't seen it. And immigration is an economic issue. So like the sense that people are feeling, you know, blending the two issues together, it makes sense. They are very related. So I think it's tough when you had mentioned the idea of, you know, people aren't getting news from news sources. Our algorithms are all very trained to who they think we are. So we are getting very limited, you know, sets of what information is out there. And, you know, my algorithm is really funky because, like, I cover misinformation. So I get, like, who I actually am combined with, like, what I do for work, combined with, like, what I'm researching. And it is genuinely confusing sometimes, the things that you see. And trying to, as a person who doesn't do this for work, like, knock down every, you know, falsehood that you're seeing or spend a lot of time researching every subject, the time is not there, the energy is not there to do all of those things. Like, you're just doing, you're getting the news, you know, in bits and pieces and, you know, spending a lot of time trying to work it all out is just something a lot of people don't really have the time or interest in doing.
Yeah. And before I let you go, just another point, like when talking to folks, I'll ask them, well, you know, are you going to vote in this election? They'll say, well, probably not. You know, I'm too busy. I'm working really hard and I don't have time to follow the news and follow what's going on. And then people just remember having more money when Trump was president because inflation was lower. It was costing less to go to the grocery store. So they just want to go back to what it was like then. And they remember the stimulus checks during the pandemic. They believe that now that Trump is president again, they're going to get some kind of check or some kind of relief.
Wow. Yep. Are people telling you that? Yeah. That they are expecting to get Trump stimulus checks? That's amazing.
They're expecting to get some kind of monetary help, like direct help. That came up a lot. They remember the check that came from Donald Trump and it was signed by him during the pandemic. And they remember spending less money. And it really came down to that. I mean, that is the thing that people just kept talking about. And they'll blend in migration, they'll blend in other things, but that's really, that was the driving force.
Right. Right, and Kamala Harris got attached to, you know, the Biden administration, and the rest is history. We're very interested in hearing from caller 202-588-0893. We're talking to the Guardian's Rachel Longgang and freelance investigative reporter Lindsay Firestein. Do we have a caller out there? I'm not entirely sure. If so, please chime in.
Yeah, well, I've been waiting for a minute.
If you could turn your radio down, and we're hearing some background sound, and we want to hear you clearly.
Well, in a second.
Please turn your Are you with us, sir?
You're eligible. Call 888-248-1211.
Hello? Hi, can you? We were hearing a lot of background sound. If you can.
Oh, you got my TV. Oh,
now we're hearing you clearly. Thank you so much for. Thank you. Your question or your comment?
My question and comment is for real, you know. I was a homeless guy, and I just struggled through the struggle. And since this pandemic and all this stuff that's going on, I mean, that was just a comment to say that, you know what, never give up and always be strong. I'm Michael Mack, and that's all I got to say. Thank you.
I appreciate Lindsay or Rachel and Rachel,
that's the attitude we need right now. Thank you, Michael. I think we can all use that injection of positive thinking and strong spirit. Be well.
I remember. See, I was an orphan when I grew up. You know what I'm saying? Didn't have mom, didn't have dad, didn't have nothing. But you know what? God had me. And I remember the little lady that used to bend over in the crib and say, don't worry about it, it'll be okay. You know, and I think when times like this here come, but they say you better strap up them boots and let's what? We got to stick together like they used to do in the old day, man. You know what I'm saying? When neighbors was neighbors and the police used to walk down the street and say, hey, Harry, how you doing over there running the store? Everything all right?
Right, right. Then with
I'm
the
just being open, honest of a thought. You know what I'm saying? Because in my eyes, it's like this. Every day is a challenge, you know what I'm saying? You don't know what tomorrow brings, but as long as you got your faith and it's in the right place, you can't lose, baby. You feel me? I got one son, his name Kenneth Victor Jones, Matt, because his mama wouldn't give me but you know what? I'm Michael and my Mac, but I keep it rolling each and every day, one step at a time. And that's my story. I'm sticking to it. Because you know what? When we lose the old respect of things, how you going to regenerate and teach the little one? I got 12 grandkids. One of them going to college over there. What's that? Disney World Communication. And I'm going to start back to school on January 6th. And communications at that little joint, I forgot the name, Fair something. But January 6th, I'm going to be in school, and I'm going to be out there trying to put a story out there because I'm going to tell my story and anybody else that want to listen.
We appreciate you chiming in. Thank you so much for calling. I think we have another caller or two, if you care to chime in. Really appreciate you calling in.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Regarding the hard issue of how to combat the tsunami of misinformation, I think Trump himself is, the fount of a lot of it. Like when he said, Article 2 of the Constitution lets him do whatever he wants. But should the media devote some, people power to trying to ferret out who in Trump's camp tells him such things? Maybe they're too shameless, to affect. But it seems like it might help if they could expose people who are the source of wrong notions.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of work that's being done on that. I mean, Tom Fitton is one of the leading conduits of weird constitutional mumbo jumbo to Trump. Of course, John Eastman, his former lawyer, mixed up in January 6th. And there, you know, there are many more, but that's a really interesting field of investigative research.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it just kind of comes from him himself, to be honest. It's more like he thinks he can do something, so he says he can do it, and then tries to find someone who will justify that notion, essentially. But yeah, there are a lot of people in his circle who prop up his ideas. Also, the right-wing media these days is very centered around Trump rather than centered around like conservatism in general. So there's a lot of people that then, when he makes a claim, will try to walk back like the justification, but also just kind of parrot that he said it. And the more that you say things, the more they seem like reality. On the campaign trail, for instance, one of his biggest liabilities was that, you know, Biden and then Harris were calling him a threat to democracy. And he just simply started saying they were the threat to democracy. And you could kind of see in polling that people started saying they believed Biden and Harris were a threat to democracy. So he, as the messenger here, is really a unique power that he has to just sway minds. He swayed, you know, an entire media apparatus and basically the Republican Party toward him, despite, you know, January 6th and despite the criminal cases against him. Like, he really has this kind of appeal that I think others can't replicate. Though I do hear and believe that what you're saying and where these ideas are coming from is really important to track down, but not to discount that he himself here is the main purveyor.
So I'm wondering, here's a question for you. Is this a one-off? Is this about the charisma, however strange, of Donald Trump that's going to end in 4 years? Or do we have so established a counter-narrative backed up by, you know, Fox and social media that this is going to go on indefinitely? I mean, it seemed to me that the right, that the, you know, more progressive liberal people in this country don't have quite the answer to the power of Fox and social media at all. I mean, you know, I guess you could say MSNBC is a counter, but now Musk is talking about buying MSNBC. I mean, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts about whether this is an ongoing problem. I mean, was 2020 an exception because of the pandemic and Biden got in there, and now we're looking at, because of this disinformation, misinformation, are we looking at an indefinite conservative rampage, if you will, of the political life in this country?
I don't think it's quite that bad. I mean, Trump didn't crack 50% of the vote, and so much of his appeal is tied up in his person and his charisma, like you said, that if you look at, and he's able to mobilize these low propensity voters. I think that's the key thing. That was why he won, was he was able to energize these young men who typically don't vote. And if you look at candidates that are a lot like Trump down ballot, Trump couldn't even, despite begging his low propensity voter force to go out and do it, couldn't get them to vote for Carrie Lake, even, you know, his most slavish imitators. He can't transfer his appeal even when he wants to, let alone if he weren't on the ballot. And I think that that's something to keep in mind to avoid total despair. I mean, there are deep sectoral problems about misinformation, about media, about corporate control of media. They're all there, and we're going to be dealing with them for the rest of our lives, probably. But also, you know, Trump didn't crack 50%. And so much of the appeal is tied up with him personally that if he, you know, he'll be termed out and he'll be, you know, he's pretty old, so he's not going to be around forever. And I think that we should avoid falling into complete despair, considering that there are structural advantages that favor the more progressive forces.
Your thought, Rachel Lungang?
Yeah, I also, I mean, co-sign all that. But then the other thing here is that, you know, Trump wants you to believe there was a landslide. There is absolutely not a landslide. If you look at like the popular vote, this is a deeply polarized country. That's the main takeaway from this election. Our media is a reflection of our polarization. And I don't think, though, that he alone is the person, perpetuating this brand of conservatism. I don't think it ends with him. There will be other people who take up that mantle. I think you can see J.D. Vance really kind of honing that. If you watched him at the beginning of the campaign versus the end of it, he really got much better at selling that sort of brand. So, you know, there are a lot of younger people willing to take up the mantle, and whether they're as successful, I think remains to be seen. But yeah, his appeal, I mean, it's mixed. Like Lindsay had said, you know, the down ballot did not necessarily reflect like the mini Trumps that tried to take over that. So there's not like a clean narrative coming out of this, I don't think, but I don't think it's, oh, we're permanently conservative or anything like that either.
It's daunting what J.D. Vance is going to be 44 in 2028 and arguably quite shrewd, quite intelligent, what, Yale Law School, et cetera. And it's daunting. It's an ongoing a challenge, I think, to say the least. So why don't I get in a quick caller, if you can make a quick comment, because we're running out of time, and I appreciate you calling in. If you can make it a short and snappy, forgive me for that condition, but your question or comment, please.
Hey, no worries. I'll make this quick, as brief as I can. I haven't yet heard anybody talk about the impact of a race on this issue when they're talking about the Trump's apparently unique ability to wield misinformation and conspiracy theories to his advantage. I think that he's keying in to certain kinds of grievances, whether they're real or imagined, that, you know, really for which he's the perfect kind of vehicle. You know, whether it's racial or gender issues or kind of anti-LGBTQ plus hysteria, people are just really apparently susceptible to the most ridiculous statements, like, oh, your kid,
right,
your son goes to school a boy on Monday morning and comes home a girl Monday afternoon, and people are nodding their heads and taking that seriously, really, like they're doing gender reassignment operations during six period recess. That's absurd, but people are going for it.
Yeah.
Because they've been primed for it for years.
Right.
That's all I got.
I just want to get to our interviewees' comments on this because we are running out of time. Rachel, your thoughts?
No, I think that's it. He really has an ability to play on grievances and to play on fear, really, too. This fear that, you know, public schools are becoming places where are indoctrination factories, essentially, when in reality, public schools are underfunded and, you know, not able to even have counselors in many cases, much less people doing, you know, any kind of like intensive gender therapy or whatever the claim even is there. But it's all, you know, to play on our fear and division, because we are a very divided place. So you can really kind of like get into those chasms that people have and just spread them even wider.
Yeah.
It was a YouGov poll that I saw, but this, again, getting back to sort of the basic factual understanding that people have of the world, that they asked people to estimate the size of various minority and majority populations in the country. And the respondents estimated that 19% of the population was transgender. The reality is it's about 0.6%, but it just is fascinating and shocking to me. And it sort of changes the whole conversation when you realize the fact base that people are coming from. The idea that, you know, 19% of the population is trans, suddenly all these issues about locker rooms and gender reassignment surgery and all this stuff, women's sports, it hits completely differently if you believe that almost 20% of the population is trans versus right. That it's a very rare phenomenon that is essentially not touching on your life in any way, which is the reality.
Right. I mean, I was watching some football in North Carolina in the lead up to the election, and the number of, trans Trump commercials was astonishing. I mean, they were very strategic, you know, pouring the money in to swing states with certain kind of messaging. We are about out of time. Just real briefly, I'd like to hear both your thoughts about what people could do. I mean, there are organizations like Braver Angels that will hook, you know, progressive liberal people up with Republicans. I mean, it sounds rather daunting, and it is daunting, but I think it's really important. It's one way that I think you, our listeners, can contribute to a long-range change is we need to be in conversation. These are fellow Americans, and we need to be talking to them and not just demonizing them. They're not just deplorables. They're voters. Your thoughts in closing, Rachel and Lindsay?
Yeah, I would say don't silo yourself. Spread your, you know, media diet far and wide so you can understand where people are hearing things from, where they're coming from, and really arm yourself with the knowledge of, like, where these things originate. And be willing to have hard conversations, and then also hold leaders accountable for the comments that they make and the way that they hold each other to account in the next Trump administration.
Yeah.
And I would also urge people to support their favorite progressive media, because it's really important that you have forums for people to get the facts out there, and environments where they're supported and paid to be able to get out there and do the expensive reporting that we really need. So it's a combination of outreach and then also nurturing the organizations that produce that knowledge that we need.
Indeed. I want to thank you both for joining us today, for all you're doing, and from your time today. I've been speaking with The Grind's Rachel Linegang and freelance investigative reporter Lindsay Byerstein. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I really appreciate it. Carry on. And on with our last guest, something truly positive and uplifting, you know, to counter all the negativity that's going on out there. Step back into the Hollywood spirit with Step Africa's magical musical holiday step show, where the rich tradition of African-American stepping blends with the magic of the season. It runs December 13th through December 22nd at our beloved D.C.'s arena stage. We're joined now by Step Africa's artistic director, Imfan Akpan. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's great having you. It's you know, I there are downsides to, Zoom, but, you know, when I would do phone interviews before the pandemic, I couldn't see the face, and it's great seeing your shining face. So for folks that aren't initiated, what exactly is stepping? I mean, believe it or not, and Vaughn, there are people that aren't exactly aware of what stepping is. Please fill them in.
Definitely. Well, stepping, as Step Africa defines it, as we define it, is a highly energetic, polyrhythmic, percussive dance form that was created by African-American college students right here in the United States. And Step Africa, over the last 30 years, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary this year, we have been able to take this art form across the country and across the globe, sharing the culture and expanding the culture and letting people know exactly what stepping is.
It's so wonderful. I've been to your performances. It's very captivating, enthralling, and dynamic. I mean, this is something you don't want to miss. So tell us about the particular program that you're offering this holiday season at Arena Stage.
Yes, so Step Africa, we will be performing our magical musical holiday step show at the Arena Stage. And it's truly a wonderful experience for all ages. You can bring the family out. We have a live DJ. His name is DJ Nutcracker, where you'll get to be able to hear, you know, the great tunes of this wonderful polar Arctic kingdom. We have furry friends that visit us. Polo the
That's polo okay.
And Popper the you were talking about alliterative words here. But yes, we do have a lot of fun. We take Arena Stage and we turn it into a fun, magical place for about 90 minutes. And you get to really come in and enjoy and explore what the artists can bring and bring that energy and really have a nice time during the holiday season.
Right. And it's at Arena Stage, which is right next to the wharf. So you can go down and witness an extraordinary performance and then go have a bite to eat out at the wharf or whatever. I mean, it's a It's something, and it's something for the whole family. This is not something exclusive to adults. I mean, this is something that the whole family will enjoy.
Absolutely. This is for everyone. If you're a kid at heart, you know, we see families come out and really enjoy themselves. And we see them sometimes come out multiple times. Shows are selling out. So you really want to make sure you can secure a ticket as soon as possible.
And where do you secure the, how do people get information about it, get tickets and such?
You can go to our website. Our website is www.stepafrica.org. We do spell Africa with a K. And you'll find information on our holiday show right on the website.
And I think you can probably also go to Arena Stage.
I'm sure. Another,
yeah, right. And what, you know, forgive me, I'm ignorant. What is the reason for Africa with a K?
So Step Africa, the company, was founded by C. Brian Williams. And at that time, it was marketing for him. You know, it was it's something to make us stand out. And also, if you go into really like the history of the alphabet on the African continent, the K is used a lot. So as opposed
interesting.
To. Yeah. It's
interesting. And there's a particular D.C. relevant aspect to the show. You're going to honor D.C.'s own go-go music, if you could talk about that.
Yes. So we all know that D.C. has a huge go-go culture and history, even with the opening of the new cafe and museum. So, you know, this year, Step Africa, we're going to do one of our fan favorites, which is our go-go piece. We haven't done it in a few years. We actually did a rendition of it for the Mask It Up campaign during the pandemic, which was extremely successful and a lot of fun. And so we decided that we wanted to bring that energy back to the city this year. So we do have a piece called Go-Go, Here We Go-Go. And it's a lot of fun. We got a live MC, live DJ, got a lot of energy, a lot of, you know, the dancers. We are actually, I'm in the studio right now and I can hear them rehearsing next door. So it's a lot of fun and a lot of creative energy that goes into putting on this kind of production. So like you said earlier, we are playing from December 13th to the 22nd, so a limited run. You want to make sure that you can go ahead and check us out because, you know, once it's over, and then you'll have to wait a whole nother year.
Right, right. I have been, and it's quite an experience. I'm impressed by your educational outreach. I mean, you don't just go into a town or go overseas and do a performance. It's often, if not always, coupled with an educational component. It's so great. If you could talk about that.
Yeah. So if you look at the history of stepping, like I said, started out with African-American collegiate students. So when we go into different cities and we work with young people, we like to let them know that, yes, stepping is great and stepping is fun. But before many of us could step, we actually had to make sure that our schoolwork was done. We had to make sure that we had great grades. We had to make sure that community service was performed before we could get to stepping. So we really like to teach the concepts of teamwork, commitment, and discipline while we're also teaching and working with young folks. And that really gets them to understand the importance and the history where it comes to stepping, the respect, the love, you know, the energy that it takes and the commitment, the discipline, all of that, you know, it's wrapped up into having a good time, but and also it's wrapped up into performing this art form with integrity.
Wonderful. And just real briefly, if you could touch on what's up this coming year, this coming season for Step Africa that DC audiences can enjoy.
Oh, yeah. So we have a great lineup in coming up for 2025. We're going to continue our 50-city tour across the United States, taking our love of stepping across. And actually, currently, half of my dancers are in Senegal right now. So,
no kidding.
Wow. So the travels are there. In D.C., we will actually be hosting a Step Classic. That will be in February. You can get more information on that program. It'll be at the Warner Theater, President's Day weekend. So we're really excited about that. We're gonna be hosting different step teams, some of the best steps teams from across the country, right here in DC. And then, you know, we will continue just doing what we do. You know, the residencies, the workshops, the touring, it's nonstop, but it's a lot of fun. And we're also opening up our registration for our summer camp. So you should go to the website, keep in contact with us. All of that information is at our website, stepafrica.org.
We're going to have to end it there. Thank you so much. I've been speaking with Step Africa's artistic director, Imphan Akpan. Really appreciate all you do. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
And that's going to do it for our show. Thanks to our amazing Kalia for pulling us through, our engineer. Stay tuned for a wonderful program and the great Don't Forget the Blues with Lady Murr. I'm Dave Rabin. Stay safe. Have a great week.
WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. Protesters in Pakistan demanding the release of former Prime Minister Imran Khan broke through shipping container barriers blocking off the capital today. At least six people have died in clashes between security forces and protesters, as thousands of soldiers have poured into central Islamabad to defend government buildings. Several of the dead, including four security service members, were killed when a car rammed into them overnight. No group has yet claimed responsibility for that attack. Thousands of protesters have been arrested, and scores of people have been injured, including journalists. An AP videographer was attacked by a group of Khan supporters, who also took his camera. Khan has been in jail for over a year and faces over 150 criminal cases his supporters say are politically motivated. Protests are largely being led by Khan's wife, Bushra Bibi. Khan has claimed that his ouster in 2022 was engineered by the Pakistani military in collaboration with the United States. A series of Israeli strikes in Lebanon today hit central Beirut and the city's southern suburbs, ahead of an expected vote by Israeli leadership on whether to accept a U.S.-mediated ceasefire with Hezbollah. Israeli ground troops also reached key parts of a key river in southern Lebanon for the first time today. Lebanese officials say Hezbollah supports the ceasefire deal, which calls for a two-month halt in fighting and a buffer zone in southern Lebanon from which both Hezbollah and Israeli forces would have to retreat. Thousands of Lebanese troops and UN peacekeepers would then deploy in the south, and a U.S.-backed international panel would monitor compliance with the deal. Some hurdles do remain in achieving a ceasefire, however, as Israeli officials have demanded the right to continue striking Lebanon if Hezbollah violates the deal. Lebanese officials have rejected that idea. In domestic news, service workers at Charlotte Douglas International Airport in Charlotte, North Carolina, went on strike yesterday morning, just days before a million travelers were due to pass through the airport for Thanksgiving holiday travel. The Service Employees International Union announced the strike, saying the workers would demand, quote, an end to poverty wages and respect on the job during the holiday travel season, end quote. Many of those workers earn as little as $12.50 an hour, which is not considered a livable wage for a single person with no children in Charlotte, according to the union. The strike was expected to last 24 hours. Airport service workers include cabin cleaners, ramp workers, wheelchair attendants, and trash truck drivers. And Judge Tanya Chutkan yesterday dismissed the federal case against President-elect Donald Trump for allegedly conspiring to subvert the 2020 election results. She dismissed the case, quote, without prejudice, which means the government could still bring charges against Trump after he leaves office. Special Counsel Jack Smith filed a motion to drop his federal election interference case against Trump yesterday, citing long-standing Justice Department policy that bars the prosecution of a sitting president. Nearly 16 months after a grand jury first indicted Trump over his efforts to unlawfully overturn the results of the election, Smith asked Chutkan to throw out the case ahead of Trump's impending inauguration. Smith also moved to dismiss his appeal, seeking to revive the classified documents case against Trump. Trump has cast the cases as politically motivated and has vowed to fire Smith as soon as he takes office in January. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 64 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City, 53 degrees with light rain. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York.